You know, a lot of these efficacy issues also relate to the question of, you know, how it works, so to speak. And I've been getting input for now 2 years from the colon research people and more recently from the lung people and then the breast people. And one common thought has been that in some way this is potentiating chemotherapy. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's a great question. It is widely said that bevacizumab and drugs like it inhibit angiogenesis. There's hardly any data on that point. And I think that this is really an important question, both for use of this drug and for ongoing research efforts. One of the best talks at ASCO, I thought, this year was a plenary discussion in the lung cancer session by staff at MD Anderson. And they began to draw the distinction between anti-VEGF therapy and anti-angiogenesis therapy. VEGF is a paracrine growth factor that may have direct tumor stimulatory properties in and of itself. So it's possible that expression of VEGF by the vasculature or by the tumor actually somehow stimulates growth of the tumor, or conversely, that it regulates other growth properties of the cancer cell that are affected by chemotherapy, so that when you give anti-VEGF therapy and chemotherapy together, it might work better. On the other hand, of course, the hypothesis that led to the generation of these drugs is the angiogenesis hypothesis, that the tumors need these agents like VEGF to establish their own blood supply. But the point really is that we have no idea what the action of neutralizing VEGF with bevacizumab is and how that might differ from other drugs that are going after related proteins.
What do you think about the work of Rakesh Jain, who's kind of in your neck of the woods in terms of this issue?
Well, Dr. Jain and his colleagues have shown that anti-VEGF therapy can decrease vascular permeability and interstitial pressure in tumors, which is not a big surprise. The original name for VEGF when it was first discovered was not vascular endothelial growth factor. It was vascular permeability factor, so-called by Harold Dvorak, who was a pathologist at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. And what they showed is that this product really did affect vascular permeability, and that by neutralizing it, you could change vascular permeability. So it's not a big surprise that this too is a consequence. So I think the point really is that these are complicated mechanisms of biological action of VEGF, and conversely or relatedly complicated actions of neutralizing VEGF. And one of the interesting questions then becomes, is it really an antivascular effect or is it an anti-tumor effect? And there have been efforts from Dr. Jain and others to look at blood supply feeding the tumors in patients treated with anti-VEGF therapy. And in general, those have shown that effective treatment lowers the vascular supply. But that's sort of a chicken and an egg argument, because if the tumor gets smaller, there are fewer blood vessels, and if the tumor gets bigger, there are more blood vessels, and it's not clear if you've just got an anti-tumor effect or if you truly have an anti-VEGF effect.
Well, I guess the other thing is, at least in the three major common solid tumors, the efficacy as a single agent is not too impressive, although I know, you know, objective responses have been seen at least in breast cancer, but the thought is somehow there's much more anti-tumor activity when it's combined with chemotherapy. Do you think that's the case?
Well, that's the way the studies have all evolved, isn't it? And certainly in breast cancer, the response rate to single-agent bevacizumab looks to be less than 10%, probably closer to 5%. And so the argument has been that you are potentiating that by using chemotherapy. But whether you need chemotherapy for these effects is not really known.
To what extent have you yourself used bevacizumab?
So we've actually had a lot of clinical trials experience with bevacizumab. We did a study looking in the phase 2 setting at bevacizumab in combination with vinorelbine. These data were presented at the San Antonio meeting in December 2002, and we showed that the regimen is reasonably well tolerated, that there was clinical activity. We showed a response rate of about 30%, but at the time, for this refractory patient population, there was that negative randomized trial, and so that did not lead to more broad use of that particular combination. What we've been doing more recently is a randomized phase 2 study of so-called low-dose or metronomic chemotherapy given either by itself or in combination with bevacizumab as first-line treatment for advanced breast cancer. And we've shown that in data that we hope to present at the San Antonio meeting this coming December, this regimen is very interesting, and we hope to have some very nice clinical and correlative data to support that.
What exactly is the regimen?
The regimen is low-dose oral Cytoxan, 50 milligrams a day, plus low-dose oral methotrexate, 2.5 milligrams twice a day for 2 days each week, with or without the addition of bevacizumab. And the argument here is that in laboratory models, the so-called repetitive or low-dose or metronomic chemotherapy actually provides very good tumor control in many systems and is thought to inhibit these same angiogenesis factors. There was a very exciting poster at ASCO in the ovarian cancer session where using this low-dose oral cytoxan with bevacizumab led to substantial response in platinum refractory ovarian cancer. So this is a very well-tolerated combination that I think is worth watching as the data evolve.
Hopefully it'll move into earlier stage disease, but in terms of palliative setting, it sounds pretty patient-friendly.
So far, that's been our experience, and it doesn't make you sick to your stomach. It doesn't make your hair fall out. Patients who've been on it for months and months and months and months sort of do have some hair thinning and some sort of fatigue that accumulates.
And I take it, and I'm sure you don't want to discuss the specifics, but I take it that you're encouraged by what you're going to be presenting or what you found so far.
So far, we have some exciting data that, you know, we'll be looking forward to sharing.
That's great. Where is this regimen heading?
We will be finishing this randomized phase 2 experience this summer. We are then moving into the adjuvant setting as a pilot study for this trial. The study that we have activated now at Dana-Farber and at Indiana University with my good friends Kathy Miller and George Sledge is a pilot study of bevacizumab in the adjuvant setting. The patient population is women who have had preoperative chemotherapy for breast cancer and who have residual cancer left at the time of their surgery. And those women will be offered 1 year of bevacizumab therapy to see if it's feasible. And then a second cohort of the same type of patients will be offered bevacizumab in combination with this metronomic chemotherapy. And that would be 1 year of bevacizumab and 6 months of the metronomic chemotherapy. We chose this patient population for a couple of very specific reasons. First, we know that women who have residual disease after preoperative chemotherapy constitute a very high-risk patient population for whom there is no standard treatment. And secondly, these women have tumors, which by definition have some resistance to chemotherapy. And so instead of just treating them with more chemotherapy, we thought it would be interesting to bring in a biological agent.
That's fascinating. Whenever we get the oncologists together, present difficult cases, the first thing they always say is that patient.
Yeah. So, you know, there is that temptation, oh, they've progressed on anthracyclines and taxanes in neoadjuvant setting, or they have lots of residual disease. What should we give them? Should we give them capecitabine? Should we give them gemcitabine? And first, there's no data that more chemotherapy is beneficial in this setting. And secondly, there's reason to believe, and you and I have talked about this before, that women with tumors like that have tumors that are more or less intrinsically resistant to chemotherapy. And so offering more chemotherapy is understandable, but there's a lot of reason to believe it's just not going to be very effective.
The Bev chemo arm sounds very interesting. What was the rationale for the Bev alone?
Well, first, we don't know that bevacizumab alone might not be effective. And, of course, the adjuvant trials that are going to ultimately answer this question will be large cooperative group studies of chemotherapy plus or minus bevacizumab. But bevacizumab alone has the advantage of being better tolerated. So when you start talking about extended periods of therapy, it probably is more feasible. And secondly, we also just wanted to see if it would be safe to give 6 to 12 months of bevacizumab in the adjuvant setting.
Yeah, there's a lot of controversy in the colon setting about the continuation of bevacizumab after chemotherapy.
Right.
I'm going to guess that this is going to attract some attention and discussion.
Well, I think it already has, and the hope is that we don't make the same mistake we have made in the trastuzumab field. This is a point that my colleague Eric Weiner brought out in his discussion of the paper at ASCO. You know, with trastuzumab, we never addressed this question as to whether treatment beyond progression or maintenance trastuzumab therapy was clinically effective and valuable. And so we frequently do it with patients because it is a well-tolerated drug. There are these data that it may make chemotherapy more effective. In the bevacizumab field, we hope not to make that mistake, and I think it's even more critical for that field, in part because, of course, you know, four times as many patients are now candidates for bevacizumab as they are for trastuzumab because most women who have metastatic breast cancer have HER2-negative, not HER2-positive breast cancer. Secondly, we have these data that women whose tumors are more refractory to chemotherapy, refractory to anthracyclines and taxanes, do not derive substantial clinical benefit from bevacizumab treatment. And so there is a logical endpoint to therapy. And you can say, you know, gee, Mrs. Jones, it looks like, you know, in that setting, this drug does very, very little, if anything, for patients. So I am hopeful that they can mount trials that will critically address the question of bevacizumab duration of treatment. And of course, this is not unique to breast cancer. It's now a pressing issue for colorectal cancer and lung cancer as well.
That's a great trial. I think it's going to attract a lot of interest.
Well, I hope so. And do we have some very handsome correlative studies built into it, taking advantage of the proteomics research that Indiana University is very well renowned for, and looking at some other markers of tumor recurrence and of endothelial cell biology that our group is very interested in.
That's awesome. What about pre and post biopsies?
We have not pursued that, though other groups have looked at this with bevacizumab. And Sandy Swain at NCI has done a lot of work looking at docetaxel in combination with bevacizumab in the preoperative setting. I think these are obviously biologically very interesting. My only reservation has been that one of the ongoing concerns about bevacizumab has been issues of wound healing. In our initial phase 2 trial of bevacizumab with vinorelbine, we saw several cases of poor wound healing around porticaths or chest walls that had had surgical resection. So I would be quite cautious about offering bevacizumab in a preoperative setting where wound healing still might be a very critical issue. Outside of a trial, I would not do that at this point. So I think that that's just something that just needs to be explored. And of course, it also makes sense because VEGF is a critical component of normal wound healing as you reestablish normal vasculature. So again, these are not total barriers for using the drug in patients, but I think it means that I'm a little more cautious still about thinking about it in the preoperative breast cancer setting.